How's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us, rolling out of the rack on this Wednesday morning, welcome to it. It is 7:13. It's a beautiful morning. A little on the chilly side, actually, compared to the last few days. It's only 11 or 12 degrees right now. But eventually we'll get to a high of 22 with a lot of sunshine out there. Same deal tomorrow, sunny, a little bit warmer, 26. Maybe back into some showers coming up on Friday and Saturday. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. Still a rest of a busy show ahead, including Pierre Maguire visiting with us live from Vegas just after 8 o'clock. And then after 9, we are going to talk to Red Blacks head coach Paul LaPolice, of course. CFL Board of Governors announced on Monday. Season is a go. 14 games instead of 18. And yesterday they announced the schedule. And as suspected, the Red Blacks will begin the season on the road. They're gonna be in Edmonton for the opening game Saturday night. A Saturday 10 o'clock game in the middle of summer. Like, there's nothing better than the Saturday 10 p.m. kickoffs.
Yeah,
that's what I say.
Still
right there.
Late outside. Well, actually in Edmonton 7, 8 o'clock. But yeah, you'll be playing till midnight. You're good.
Oh dear. Yeah, not necessarily prime time, but regardless, it'll be great to have CFL football back. And of course, they'll be taking on the newly named Edmonton Elks. This will be the line. Have you checked? So yesterday, the Red Blacks tweeted out their schedule, and so it was the logos of the teams.
Yeah.
And the Elks, of course, which used to be called the Eskimos, have a new logo. And so I'm looking at it and I'm going, what the heck? I've seen it before, but you know what I mean? The first time you see something when you're not used to seeing something, you're going, what is that? Oh, yeah, that's their new symbol.
Yeah.
Anyway, that is their opening game. Now, some interesting notes. First of all, the Red Blacks will spend the first 3 weeks not at home. So they start with two road games. They're in Edmonton. Then they have a bye week, actually, in week two. And then they play Saskatchewan in Saskatchewan week three. And then the home opener is against BC Saturday night, August the 28th. So it's an extra 3 weeks from the beginning of the season again for, we'll see if, Ontario continues to lift restrictions. Yeah. The numbers continue to point in the right direction. All of this leading to the possibility of perhaps in those 3 weeks, the intervening 3 weeks, the possibility of more fans being allowed into games. I think that's the thinking behind behind the rollout of the schedule as far as Ottawa goes.
Yeah, and also if you're Mr. Gowdy and everybody involved, JR, trying to sell inventory for the next couple of months, I'll say this is an advantage, not necessarily being on the road, JR, but the way the schedule sets up. When you have football teams and the way the CFL turns over, but the fact that you've been out for a year and a half, I think playing one game, having the bye week early on, I think it'd be an advantage to the Red Blacks, at least from a competitive standpoint. So let's hope the barn is full. And like I say, hopefully they can get some cohesion on a very, very strange football year.
Yeah. By the way, just looking at it right now, the Hamilton Tiger Cats begin on the road in week one in Winnipeg. The Toronto Argonauts begin on the road in week two in Calgary. Toronto is in Winnipeg the following week. Hamilton is in Saskatchewan the following week. And then I'm just looking at it right now. So the Argos have the first Ontario-based team to have a home game.
Yeah.
And that is in week three.
And so, as far as Eastern Conference, I guess Montreal's not as worried about it, JR, or at least where they're trending towards?
Montreal actually doesn't have a home game in the first few weeks either.
Okay.
They don't have a home game until week four as well. So there we go. So in fact,
It
looks like Hamilton doesn't have one until... they don't have one until week five, believe it or not. So it's going to be a backloaded Eastern home game thing. Now, some peculiar things as I went through it last night. There's only 14 games and not 18. It's only a 9-team league. So in other words, 8 opponents. What are the chances in a, albeit, 14 games, not 18, with only 8 other teams that you wouldn't play one of the other teams even once? That seems unusual to me, and yet that is the case. The Ottawa Red Blacks do not play the Winnipeg Blue Bombers at all, home or away, this season. I'm not sure whether that's the case for all the teams, whether they said, okay, all of the teams aren't going to play one of the other teams once. It seems a little strange. Now, it is. It's loaded for to try to mitigate travel as much as possible.
Sure,
so they've
got
4 games against the Montreal Alouettes. So that is the
difference in the schedules. They play Montreal 4 games out of the 14. They play Winnipeg 0 times.
Yeah, and yeah, whether it's travel for COVID or travel for costs, you have the 3 trips out west. I'm assuming, JR, that after playing Edmonton on the 7th, they'd return home and do a trip. They're not going to stay out west for a couple of weeks, right?
No.
So you'd come back. So hey, basically, from a cost standpoint, you got 3 plane trips, and then the rest of it, you can take the old train down to Toronto, to Hamilton, over to Montreal, and I think that has to be factored in as well with a uncertainty of revenue for a 14-game season.
And the other thing that I don't know is typically CFL teams do travel commercial. They travel on planes with you and I. I wonder if that is going to be the case this season or whether all teams are going to. Now, some teams, like I believe that BC charters to all their games anyway.
Okay.
And the Red Blacks do have an advantage in that for Toronto, Hamilton, and Montreal, they can bus or train to those games. They have an advantage that teams out in Western Canada do not have. They have the ability to do that.
Yeah.
But I wonder for those games out west whether the Red Blacks are actually going to be chartering for all those games.
Yeah, and also getting the players in, JR, from the country standpoint, what kind of a vaccination process has there been for the international players, for the domestic players, and what does that look like for the clubs and employees and everybody else going forward? That'd be a big factor in their travel.
Red Blacks also announced the retirement of 3 of their players yesterday. J.P. Bolduc, who is a special teams player, Danny Mason, a defensive lineman, and Jalen Saunders, and this is an interesting story. So Jalen Saunders is a receiver and might have been a key part of the Red Blacks offense this year, but he was in, I think we talked about this about a month ago, he was in judging by the pictures, a bad car accident. They think there's the possibility he could play later in the season, but again, based on numbers and everything, they don't want to release him because they want to retain his rights. So the easiest way to do that in the CFL is for him to retire, and I guess they retain his rights in retirement.
Okay.
That allows them to open up a spot in terms of bringing players into camp. But they still have his rights should he decide to come back.
Yeah, so. And literally a tough break, JR, for a player that's not going to have any insurance. And if you don't have a contract and haven't been paid for a year and a half, to all of a sudden be in an automobile accident, not going to be any pay coming in or any revenue. So hopefully he can get back and make a little bit of dough here in the CFL.
And the other Red Black story, and of course this came to light last week, an ugly story out of Toronto that involved Red Black's player, a draft pick by the name of Chris Larson. He's never played for the team, but he being a part of what was an alleged incident involving a beating of a person in Toronto, which he was alleged to have been a part of. His lawyer now says that he has been cleared, for his role, alleged role in that. He's been cleared on all fronts, he says. So we'll see what that means for the Red Blacks.
Yeah, for sure.
They had suspended him pending the Toronto police investigation. The investigation has now, as they said, they interviewed him. This is his lawyer talking. They interviewed him and came back yesterday and said he is no longer a suspect. At most, he might be a witness. To this. So we'll see what this means for Chris Larson and his future with the Red Blacks going forward. But that is the story that, and again, a lot of people kind of jumped to very quick conclusions on this.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
You know, essentially the guy's reputation was in tatters the day after this came to light.
Yeah.
But as his lawyer is saying, it's not official from police yet, but his lawyer now saying that he's been cleared.
Yeah. And as you said, it'll be up to the Red Blacks to make a decision on it themselves.
All right. 7:21. Let's go to game last night. It is the Lightning and the Islanders. Game 2. Big game for Tampa. Lost game 1. Needed a win. Needed a goal.
Savard to the right point. He'll sweep it in and behind the net. Oh. Centering pass. And score! Braden Point put it off the back bar. It came right out. But it beat Varlamov. The quick centering pass from behind the net from Kucherov. And Braden Point. His 10th of the playoffs. It's 1-0 Lightning.
He is a goal-scoring machine, that guy, especially in this year's playoffs. 5 straight games with a goal, 10 overall, as you heard right there. It got the Lightning started. Now, the Islanders came back to tie at 1-1, but eventually Tampa won it 4-2. They've evened the series at a game apiece. The game involved a number of skirmishes. And that's a word you only use when it comes to hockey, right? That's the only place we are allowed to use the word skirmish. It's like the only time you're allowed to use the word brandish is with a knife. Skirmishes are part of hockey, and there were a lot of those last night from the first period to the end of the game. And this is the Islanders playing Islander hockey. That's the way they love to play it all the time. And Tampa Bay is trying to kind of stand up for themselves. They didn't do it as much in game one. They did it last night. Now they got the win, so I guess maybe they think this is how they have to play.
Yeah.
I don't know that, in my opinion, that's in their best interest to play the Islanders' style of hockey, but it got them a win last night. So.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you know, the physicality, JR, you're going to have to compete in the playoffs. They've built that last year with some players. I just don't think in the case of chasing around where they got so emotional with Komarov and Martin and other guys, it's kind of like when you get into the yapping and get into the pushing and shoving face washes, that's the issue. As far as competition, they showed last year they can do it. Just don't turn it into a sideshow. And as far as Mr. Point, I find it interesting. It's almost like Gretzky or the great players, JR. It's almost like they decide, you know what, this year I'm going to be a playmaker or playoffs, and then this year I'm going to be a goal scorer. You know what I mean? Like Braden Point can make plays, as can Kucherov, and they both can score. And now he's decided, you know what, I'm going to go into goal scoring mode, and already has 10 early into the third round.
He also was a part of a controversial play in the game in which he barreled into Semyon Varlamov, the Islanders goalie, and received a penalty, even though it pretty clearly looked like at high speed as he was going in with the puck that he was cross-checked by the Islanders defenseman and really had no choice but to run into Varlamov. Here is Braden Point on that play.
That's tough on the ref. He sees a big collision. You know, it's hard. It happens fast, so I can't really blame anyone. You know, I'm just glad everyone was all right, because you don't like to see collisions like that.
So he's very magnanimous there. Can you imagine though if Tampa had have ended up losing that game? Because he got a cross-checking penalty on that play, and the Islanders scored a power play goal 30 seconds later to tie the game at one. Now it's all becomes water under the bridge, and we can all move nicely along because Tampa Bay ends up winning the game.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Under the same scenario, he gets a penalty, they get a power play goal, Islanders end up winning the game. I don't think he's speaking the same way.
No, and crazy circumstance, Jer, the referee is right there. If you're honestly, and I know it doesn't have to be intent, because at times you're just trying to protect yourself, but if you're calling cross-check on a guy running into the goaltender, most circumstance, and I know even if you're driving the net, I'm probably saying, hey, 5-minute major, you're out of the game. First of all, his stick wasn't even up. He absolutely gets pushed, and I know it's in real time, but the referee's in a great spot there, and he absolutely botched the call. And from the Islanders' standpoint, certainly scored, but also looked touch and go as a spotter put Varlamov out and put old Sorokin back in. Didn't end up costing them, but yeah, it was a really interesting sequence where, again, that was just a really bad call for an official that was in a great spot to make it.
They showed Steven Stamkos, because I think they went to commercial break and then came back, and they showed a replay of Steven Stamkos talking to, I don't remember the name of the referee in this case, but the referee was like, it was, you know, you could just not necessarily read his lips, but by his, you know, he's kind of gives the cross. Like, he was very definitive. Like, oh, I had that call all day long. That was clear as anything that was a cross check. I'm like, really, buddy?
Yeah.
Not even close.
No, and I don't know if it was late in that period early on. Of course, the Islanders get kind of a soft call against them.
Oh, yeah. You knew that was coming.
Well, and now, hey, we've always had it in screen, in building, but with the tablets and everything else, and even for the referees, it was one where, like I said, he's in a great spot there. If you want to call goaltender interference, okay. How he come up with the idea that Point basically got the stick up and cross-checked him, like I say, he's in a tuck position by the time he runs into him.
Wouldn't you love, you remember the one time, Tim Peel, right? It ended up ending his NHL career. We inadvertently left his, left his mic on and television picked it up.
Oh, that's right.
But of course, he turned the mic on in the building, right, to announce penalties. Can you imagine, they're in commercial break and the two referees normally go and stand by the penalty box, right? And they're kibitzing or whatever, probably looking up at the big screen. They're replaying it. They've already made their call at that point. Yeah. Can you imagine? I would love to eavesdrop in that conversation. hey there, Bill. I think you blew that one, eh? We got to make sure we got an even up here coming up. That was a terrible call.
But if people could see the humor behind it, where he'd also say, I messed that one up so bad, but watch when Stamkos comes over, how firm I'm going to be with him. And then the other one I always laugh at, because I've been in the spot, when Varlamov, and I keep saying his name wrong, but I'm going to stay with it anyway, when the trainer comes, how many times the conversation is always the goaltender saying, okay, I'm fine, but look, how am I? Are we going to get the call here? Like that. That's what the conversation.
I can't look up.
That's what the conversation is, JR. It's not all. Oh gosh, my head hurts. It's hey, how's it looking here? Like I haven't seen anything behind me. Are we kind of good to go here? And the trainers, and they're trying not to laugh. Like there's so many little conversations, and as you say to the referees, like between periods, when you go to look at that, you're like, oh my God. And there's a supervisor that's always there. Like you're hearing from him right away too. Like, man, what were you thinking? By respecting what Point's saying, Point took the right tact. Hey, you know what? It's in real time, but he's right on the goal line. You're in perfect position to see the cross-checking penalty should have been on Pellick, yeah. The Islander defender.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And probably if you're the official in that case, you're going, well, there goes that. Probably blows the Stanley Cup final assignment, which means there's three more paychecks. Yeah. So I'm not going for the really nice cottage this summer.
No.
Probably going for the mid-market one. Where it was really going to go high-end with the extra dough I was going to make.
No, that would scare the league. And you know, it's one of those calls. And then later on, as we have talked about or addressed in the first hour, the too many men on the ice. And I just can't understand some of the situations, JR. Real time is fine, but if you want to get into too many men, the whole premise of having four guys on the ice, especially from a linesman standpoint, the first linesman's making sure it's onside. The job of the back linesman is always to just be looking around and counting. Hey, you know, that's my whole job, is to make sure that there's the right amount of people on the ice. That's why I'm out there.
Yeah, Palat scores the goal, and he, you know, and there's seven players. There are seven players on the ice. Now, look, as guys are coming off and going on, there are times, right, when there is a sixth player on the ice sometimes, but it's usually close to the bench.
Yeah.
And you know, you can't call it exactly like that, but I think we all understand the spirit of the rule. This was, in this case, there were seven guys on the ice. One guy was close to and going to the bench, and the other guy was sort of skating toward the bench, but not even close. Like, I wonder if, and I don't want to create too many layers of rules and everything, but have they ever discussed the idea of painting the area in front of the bench, and whether it's, I don't know, 5 feet out, just putting kind of a, you know, and just making that area a gray area, if you know what I mean. Like, you actually put a box there if a player skates or inside that box, he is deemed to be either coming on or going off the ice, not an issue. Yeah. Or does that just overcomplicate
everything? No, I don't think it does, JR, because I also to it, and I understand, hey, you know what? They used to call this a lot more on the goaltender switch, right? Remember where there was a big issue with when the goaltender doesn't get close enough to the bench and the guy
the
comes on?
Thing? Yeah.
And they call it right away. In the spirit of the rule, to me, if you're intent is to go to the bench. I'm not a big, you know, I don't care that guys are going on, but when you look at this one wide shot, no, you're taking advantage of it. I think a zone both in, okay, I got to be in this zone area, then I can make changes, and then as long as I'm not trying to play the puck, but even if the puck came into the zone, okay, if it hits me, it shouldn't be a penalty, and then the other one, I just take away all the contact in that area as well, especially in the second period change when everybody's crossing over each other. I think you'd save a lot of crap, and in the case of the change, absolutely. This is where you have to be. Now we'll get into was a skate into the zone. I know it's always a bit of an issue, but as I say, as long as your intent is to make the change, I'm okay with it. And like I said, at the end of the day, to me, it had no effect on the play, but I also understand the linesman should be there making the call.
And Barry Trotz and company were not happy with that. And they had the iPad on the bench, and you can clearly, you know, he's kind of the ref right there. Like they got the freeze frame right there, and it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 skaters as Andre Palat goes in and scores what is the go-ahead goal and eventually what would be a Tampa win to even the series. So it goes back to Long Island for Game 3 coming up tomorrow. Series even 1-1. Montreal-Vegas Game 2 goes tonight. I see that the Quebec government announced yesterday that they are going to increase capacity at the Bell Center for Games 3 and 4. They're going to go from 2,500 to 3,500. So increasing attendance by 1,000. It will be far short of what we'll see in Vegas again tonight. That upside-down crowd we saw in Game 1 of, 18,000, I think, is the sellout number in Vegas. Yeah. So 3,500 will be at the Bell Center for Game 3 coming up on Friday.
Yeah, and, hey, a little extra crowd. Now, for where the tarps are at, and from the camera view, you don't see it. Kind of like to see what it's like in-building, but for the players and for the noise in the lower bowl, JR, it certainly doesn't hurt. And from a revenue standpoint, for a couple of games in Montreal, I know it's only 1,000 extra people, but start to see some of the ticket prices. Probably not what they're charging to the fans, but on the black market, and I don't know if we'll have a game. Somebody posted yesterday for Game Game 6 in Montreal. It was $10,000 for two tickets. So if you're crazy enough to end up paying for it, I'm not even feeling a Game 6 right now. But for the two games, like I say, it should create at least a little more atmosphere.
I think the price for Game 3 tickets will be determined by Game 2 tonight. I think if Vegas wins Game 2 tonight and it's 2-0 going home, I know the old, you're never in trouble till you lose a home game, but, you know, Vegas was full value for their win the other night, and I think if they win again tonight, I don't want to say the series, you know, the series is not over by any means, but, but by the, you know, on the opposite side of things, if Montreal wins tonight, then I think the Montreal is upside down, and they think they're going to win this series if they win the game tonight.
Yeah, I agree. And also, too, if they lose, it's almost like, hey, I want to get out and see a game in games 3 and 4, kind of enjoy it. And going back to World Championships, JR, I was at a game years ago, and it was Sweden versus Finland, semifinal of the World Championships in Helsinki. Finland was up 5-1, and just remember sitting with people at that time, buying tickets and selling, and that was a game where they collapsed and lost to Sweden. I just remember people literally throwing their tickets away because the final ended up being Canada versus Sweden. That's the Anson Carter goal, but to your point, the fluctuation of that, and yeah, how you feel about it. I think a win tonight, and that market really starts to go bonkers with, well, we knocked off Toronto, we swept Winnipeg. Boy, oh boy, we got a chance to go to the finals here, and let's start getting tickets for Game 6.
You feel like it's series over if Vegas wins tonight?
I'm not going to say series over, but my gut feeling after talking to Pierre yesterday, who was there, Pierre McGuire, and I took Montreal to win the series. How Petrie's health is and how they kind of come back tonight, I'm not going to say game over, but I'm feeling a bit of what you probably felt in 07 with Ottawa against Anaheim, that I'm starting to wonder, okay, they'll come home for game 3 and give a real good push, but will they go more than 5 games? As we sit here today on a Wednesday morning, JR, that's kind of how I think the series will go. They'll lose tonight, they'll win 1 of 2, and they'll lose game 5 in Vegas, but that's just day-to-day with me.
But, you know, so hang on. So you predicted Montreal would win the series.
No, for sure.
Right?
Sure.
And you did that through analysis. You didn't
do that just to be
a contrarian.
No. I thought, you know,
so
I just
one game and let me explain here. Yeah. You know, Montreal played very well for the first 10 minutes of that game one. They were competitive in the game. Now they lost the game, but it was not a one-sided
ice tilter,
Vegas skating downhill for 60 minutes kind of game. It was reasonably competitive. You have made the determination right now that you have thought now that your prediction is now out the window.
Yeah, it is, Jared. Okay. And that is either if you're working in a playoff series or with a team, how you feel game to game. And after watching that and talking to people, I'm wondering whether or not as we get to round 3, whether or not the physicality, whether or not Montreal can really match up. And I'll also say, I think in with Montreal, and again, I always say that, Jer, internal expectations. I'm not saying that they're just happy and everyone keeps saying, you know what, the job's not done yet. I think a lot of the people are pretty satisfied. I just wonder if they're really going to be able to handle Vegas. And I just want to see the physical tone tonight. That's what has me leery going into game 2.
All right. 9 o'clock will be the face-off time tonight from Vegas for game 2. We'll have the game for you here on TSN 1200. This comes in, this text at 12-1200. Not on any of the games or any of the discussion points. Awesome Uber Eats commercial with Patrick Waugh and Mario Tremblay. Surprised they revisited that, especially for, I can't read that word. Good for them. Anyone under 30 may not get it, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
It comes from Unsigned.
Yeah, they had a meeting a couple of weeks ago, right, where somebody media-wise got them together for an interview, and they patched things up. So good to see that.
It is 25 years later.
Yeah, hard to believe.
And I'm sure there were a few checks that were exchanged in exchange for them agreeing to do the commercial. But, yeah, I think it's pretty good. If you haven't seen it yet, it's part of the playoff rotation for Uber Eats. But, yeah, pretty good.
Well, Mario has a great sense of humor. I don't know Patrick Waugh as well. But I also say if you're a Montreal Canadiens alumni, JR, and you're showing up a lot of different things here, why not smooth it over and, hey, put
and
it behind
cash them
you.
Checks.
Yeah, exactly. Have a couple of cold ones and just laugh about it.
All right, 7:37. Still to come before 8 o'clock. It's our TSN $1,200 Minute. Hammer, I saw you grab the questions. Take a look. I'm not feeling it today.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm the exact opposite. I thought if you just... I can't give hints. I think it's pretty easy.
Okay.
Because most of it is topical. That's why.
Yes. And the answers are easy. But typically, I do probably of 10 questions, five or six of them are on hockey, and the other four are kind of a mishmash of other sports. This one, I went with a lot of the other sports, but I went with easier questions.
And it's all present. That's the thing.
Yeah.
The only one that I think that could trip up some people and their memory is number nine.
Number nine. Yeah, but that's
that one's just sneaky.
That's a 50-50 question, though. Anyway, somebody will get a chance to win $1,000 coming up just before 8 o'clock with our TSN 1200,000 minute. Don't forget, Paul LaPolice, head coach of the Red Blacks, will join us on the show coming up just after 9. Pierre McGuire live from Vegas after 8. And when we come back, if you're a Blue Jay fan right now, you're upside down about Vladdy Guerrero, unbelievable MVP season, leading all-star vote-getter, all that other stuff, like young guys, all good. And then there's the bullpen. And Charlie Montoyo, the Blue Jay manager, has had enough, either of the bullpen or questions about the bullpen. We're not quite sure, but we'll hear from him after the latest meltdown. That's coming up next right here on TSN 1200. On this Wednesday morning, it's game day. It's a double game day for us. In fact, here on TSN 1200, we got the Euro 2020. We're into game number two for all the teams, starting today with Italy's second game. Of course, they had the big win over Turkey in the opening game of the tournament last Friday. Today, they'll take on Switzerland. Big match. Swiss had a draw in their first game. They are, they're in the second tier of teams that are pretty good. Probably not good enough to win the entire thing, but pretty decent. And, of course, we'll see what Italy's made of. So that's our match of the day here on TSN 1200 at 3. And then, of course, at 9 o'clock tonight, we'll have game two of Montreal and Vegas with the Golden Knights up 1-0 in that. And squeezed in between all of that audio goodness, 6 o'clock tonight, Eric Makromella is back with another spellbinding edition of Offside, his always unique take on the world of and business of sports that happens tonight. 6 o'clock on TSN 1200.
Yeah, and almost tweeted before I went to bed, JR, last night and decided I won't tweet because it gets people fired up. But I'm thinking to myself, it's funny in professional sports when we talk about managers coming in and building hockey teams. And I know it's different for expansion versus a true rebuild. But I was thinking, Mark Bergevin, 9 years it's taken them to get to kind of a fun playoff run, which I don't think is sustainable in other years. And I'm looking, how is it possible that Vegas is this darn good? And I kept saying to myself, I kept counting on my fingers, which fortunately I have five. How is Vegas only in year four, Jer? First of all, it feels like they've been around longer, but how can you be that darn good? And Montreal has built a lesser hockey team, to my point, in 9 years that really is going nowhere other than giving you a fun little run here this year, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I understand that. Now Vegas was given a team. Now, to their credit, George McPhee was able to swindle a bunch of other managers in particular who quite obviously had no idea either what they were doing or were so out of step with how to do an expansion draft and how to protect your own players that he was able to do what he did. Full credit to him for that, man. That should never happen again. It should not and will not happen for Ron Francis in Seattle. I think most teams will have learned their lesson of, at the worst, the most you're going to lose is one player. Just remember that.
Now, go back to, say, Bob Murray. First of all, how does Bob Murray have a job in Anaheim? How is Theodore playing on a team just east of you, and you have a god-awful team? And then the other part of this, and I'll say from Montreal, and I can compare it all over the league. I know they're older, JR, but Pietrangelo, I'll say in comparison to Weber, and Weber's been a nice player. You would dream as a franchise to get a Pietrangelo at any point in his career. He's a number one defenseman. And in the case of Mark Stone, you would dream as other NHL teams to have these players in their prime. So I know they've done good work. And again, at some point it may catch up with them. But I'll tell you what, the Josh Anderson contracts and the Drouins and all the other moves, and I like Montreal's moves, but when you start to look at the risk assessment, they are absolutely peaking right now. Now, I know they have three young players up front, JR and Romanov on the back end, but how Gallagher to Anderson to Drouin go up and down is going to age along with Weber
Carey
and Price.
Shea Weber.
It's going to be nasty. And so I just am thinking that this is wild. How
Jeff Petrie.
And to summarize, if you're an owner, you say to the guy, listen, you're coming in. I want you to give me something here in 5 years. Enough of this, let's build a bid and let's win one round. You give me a championship team or you're out the door. I mean, like I said, you go to Columbus, to Philadelphia, to a lot of these franchises, managers have been hanging around forever and never done anything.
All right, 7:47, Blue Jays last night. All right, they're back in Buffalo. First of all, I got a text from somebody, and I absolutely agree, because I'm watching bits and pieces. I'm kind of scrolling through a bunch of different. I'm watching NBA. I'm watching the hockey game last night. I'm watching flipping over the Blue Jay game. I don't know how many. There were a lot of fans there, first of all.
Okay.
And there were a lot of people cheering for the Yankees. And I get it. You know, the Yankees, A, are popular, period. And it is New York State. But I was, it was like, it felt like just the audio coming through my television. It felt like a Yankee home game last night.
Okay.
Regardless, the Blue Jays take they have a 5-2 lead at one point. Hyun-Jin Ryu is their number one starter. Is out there. He pitches through the sixth inning, does give up a run. So it's 5-3 when they turn it over to the bullpen. And as we know with the Blue Jays this year, there's been lots of good things. The bullpen has not been one of those good things. And whenever they go to the bullpen, whenever they come out and they touch the right forearm or the left forearm, what usually follows is disaster.
The slider gets away from Adams, and that's going to tie it up. Two wild pitches in the inning thrown by Castro, and Adams couldn't block it, and it gets away from him, and the Yankees have tied it up 5-5.
You always love the old freebie wild pitch to score the tying run. That one came from Anthony Castro, so the Yankees get two in the seventh to tie the game 5-5. They score another run in the eighth inning to go ahead 6-5, and they would eventually win the game by that score 6-5. So yet another game in which the Blue Jays had a chance to win it but could not, thanks in no small part to the inabilities of their bullpen. So Charlie Montoyo, as I think it's every single postgame now, especially when they lose, is asked about his bullpen, and I think he's pretty much had enough.
All I know is it seems like every day I get a question, so what's wrong with Castro? What's wrong with Chadwood? Or now it's Dolis. What's wrong with Dolis? Why are you pitching Dolis in that inning? It's been every month. I mean, the whole month about the same thing, you know? The guys, we're going to give him a chance. You know, Castro, we need Castro to pitch good. Chadwood was good today. And Dolis, we need him. You know, Romano came in, gave up a double. He's still going to pitch. You know, these are who we got. And we're going to trust him. You know, these are who we got, you know. And we've been in every game. As you know, we've been in every game. Just the bullpen's not doing the job. But you know what? They're going to get a chance again tomorrow.
That really says it all, because he said it twice. This is who we got. And,
yeah.
You know, and Charlie Montoyo has been widely criticized for the way that he uses his pitching staff, in particular his bullpen. But he is right. I mean, and they have a fine collection of players, and they've got some really nice young players, and it seems like the future is bright in Toronto. But that bullpen is a disaster right now. And it is the one part that they have either misidentified or maybe it's been bad luck. They have had a number of players that have been and are on the injured list. But listen, that's part of baseball. Injuries are part of baseball, especially with pitchers, where you're going to lose guys, and that's why it's important to have depth. And right now, it is being tested for the Blue Jays, and it just seems like every single game they lose, it's because their bullpen melts down.
Yeah, it must be incredible deflating. It's not like the pitchers don't want to do well, JR, but as a manager, you come in and say, it's all about the team, and we're all in this together. Then when the blame starts to come on you, it's an opportunity to shift the blame and now put a little pressure. And I'm sure management, hey, you look and say, we got a pretty good opportunity, a pretty good team. Can you address some of the needs there for the bullpen?
As always with the starters, too, it's six innings and out. It's when you get to that, when you start to sniff that third time through the order, it's all right, you're done. At the first sign of weakness,
that's analytics, though,
boom,
right?
You get pulled.
Remember Blake Snell in the World Series last year.
And what's the analytics when you have a terrible bullpen?
Keep the starter in.
You lose. Yes, exactly. Keep the starter in. And you got to push these starters at some point, because when they're out in the sixth and you have three innings left, usually you're going to have four relievers play at some point, right? You're going to have. And you now have to hit the minimum of three, so that you're going to have four relievers come in, because you're going to have the specialty when you got a lefty coming up as well. And they just don't have the depth in the pen.
Somebody's just texted in and said it, six blown saves in June alone. We're in halfway through the month. Does that seem right?
I don't know. The entire month, I know it's six blown saves in the last 10 dozen games, something like that.
Yeah, well, that would be this month, yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah, that's and it just it's what it is for your player or a manager, it's demoralizing.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's what you know, that is just like you feel like you just know what's going to happen.
Well, you're walking on eggshells as soon as the bullpen fires up. It's panic mode.
And doesn't seem like at this point there's one guy they can rely on. Like there's not one guy, and you can't pitch a guy every night. I understand that part of it. But it seems like whoever they bring in, it's not you, whether you're a fan or you're a player or you're a manager or whatever, there's never going to have a feeling of comfort. This guy's, maybe Romano is the closest guy to it.
He is the closest.
And he's been injured.
Yes.
And he's maybe the one guy, but anybody else, like DeLeese right now, if he comes in, Rafael DeLeese, he comes in, it's
gas
like, okay.
Gas
can grilling right there.
And also the positional players and the pitchers, you start to get sarcastic joking, right? You're sitting in the bullpen and, oh, this is great, 5-2, we're up. Watch what's going to happen now. That's what filters through, is you just expect that's going to happen every night.
Yeah. All right. So Blue Jays, Yankees will go at it again tonight. We'll see if the Blue Jays can even up the series. Okay, 7:53. Want to quickly touch on Kevin Durant's night last night in their playoff series with the Milwaukee Bucks. It was an all-timer.
These are going to be two fighters now at the center of the ring, just wailing on each other the rest of the way.
AD with at least 15 of the last 21, if my rudimentary.
Three ball, Durant, good from up top. And for the first time since it was 2-0, the Brooklyn Nets have a lead in this game. 38 for Kevin Durant.
And that wouldn't be the end of it. Kevin Durant ends up playing the entire game, every single second. 48 minutes, front to back. He ends up with 49 points, 17 rebounds, and 10 assists. An all-time performance. Here's Nets head coach Steve Nash.
Man, just historic performance. I mean, he played the entire game. He barely missed, got to the line, 17 rebounds, 10 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. I mean, 49 points. I mean, it's ridiculous what he's able to do, and it was beautiful to watch.
Especially when you're the head coach and you're on the winning side. They were down by 17. The Brooklyn Nets were at one point to the Bucks, but found a way, and it was all Durant. James Harden ended up playing, and he wasn't supposed to play. He ended up playing, and he played 45 minutes. He had 5 points.
Yeah.
5 points. So he really wasn't able to, other than take up time, he wasn't able to contribute a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah.
It was all Kevin Durant last
night. Yeah, the fact that he wanted to play, I guess, helps. 1-for-10 from the field. And also, I guess, the other side, the Milwaukee Bucks, as they move along, JR, feel like some choking dogs. But the story is about Durant, the full game. And for Mr. Nash, comment also made, hey, going to have to coach a little bit here. So that's huge going back to Game 6 and a lot of pressure on the Milwaukee Bucks.
Now, home teams have won all 5 games in that series so far. Has the feel right now that this is going to be a 7-game series. The other 2 series, which are also tied at 2, will resume tonight. Okay, 7:55. We'll take a break. When we come back, Hammer's got a confident feeling. We know how that's worked out before about our TSN $1,200,000 minute. He feels today could be the day that we're giving away the grand. We'll see. I guess we will see in about 3 minutes. If you'd like to play the game and maybe win $1,000 cash, text us right now at 12-1200. Standard messaging rates apply. We will take lucky texter number 65. Texter number 65 at 12-1200. All I need is your name. That's it. Your availability in 3 minutes to answer some sports questions. If you can go 10-for-10 in 60 seconds, you're going to pocket $1,000 cash. We'll do that when we return right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Play a contest, okay? Turn on or off your do not disturb or turn on your ringer. We called 4 different people, none of whom, did they even answer Hammer, or it just goes right to voicemail?
One answered, but said they didn't text us.
Okay.
So all the rest did not answer.
Did not answer. So again, if you're going to want to play the contest, make sure you are available to take the phone call. Anyway, we finally found someone. I think one of the other times we had difficulty finding somebody is the one time we've actually had a grand prize winner. So we'll see if it works out for this guy. That would be Chris. How you doing this morning, Chris?
Oh, not too bad.
Okay, you're not our. I don't want you to feel like you're our fifth string choice, but Chris, you're our fifth string choice to play the contest. So you all set?
Backup to the backup.
Exactly. All right. Well, let's see how this goes for you. Here's the very simple way it works. I've got 10 questions. You've got 60 seconds. If you go 10-for-10, we're going to give you $1,000. We'll give you $10 per correct answers. Correct answer. Here are the rules. I need to accept your first full, complete answer. I need all of your answers by the time the buzzer goes. And if you want to, you can pass. If we have time, we'll circle back to the question. Okay?
Sounds good.
All right. Good luck, my friend. We're going to go start here in 3, 2, 1, go. Which was the last team to win four cups in a row, the Oilers or the Islanders?
Islanders.
After this week's U.S. Open, what is the only golf major left this season?
The British Open.
In what country are this summer's Olympics?
Japan.
True or false, Carey Price has played every second of this year's playoffs?
True.
Who is the leading scorer in the history of the European Soccer Championship?
Cristiano Ronaldo.
Who is the only Canadian woman to win a tennis singles Grand Slam?
Bianca.
What city are the Blue Jays playing their home games right now?
Buffalo.
What team did Golden State beat in their championship series for all three of their titles?
Cleveland.
Yes or no, have the Sens and Lightning ever played in the playoffs?
No.
Kevin Durant started his career with what team?
Oklahoma City.
All right, we got 10 answers. Let's review. Let's see if Chris has won the $1,000. This is going to be very close. Last team to win four cups in a row, Oilers, Islanders. Islanders is correct. After this week's U.S. Open, what's the only golf major left? The British Open is correct. In what country are the Olympics this year? Japan is correct. True or false, Carey Price has played every second of this year's playoffs. That's correct. That's true. Who's the leading scorer in the history of the European Soccer Championship? Ronaldo is correct. Who is the only Canadian woman to win a tennis singles Grand Slam? Bianca is correct. What city are the Blue Jays playing their home games right now? Buffalo is correct. What team did Golden State beat in the championship series for all three of the... Cleveland is correct. Yes or no, have the Sens and Lightning ever played in the playoffs? Yes is the correct answer. They played. Remember John Tortorella with the 25% rule comment with the saves? Do you remember that by any chance?
Yeah.
Was that John Graham as a goaltender?
John Graham, yeah. Kevin Durant began his career with OKC.
Man.
Oh, Chris! A 50-51 is the only one you missed on. You won $90.
No!
Not bad for a fifth stringer.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
Well
yeah,
done.
Yeah.
All right, listen, our thanks for actually picking up the phone to play the contest. And congratulations on winning the $90. And thanks for listening and have a great day, okay?
Yeah, you too. Take it easy.
All right, hang on the line for some more information. We'll do it again tomorrow. Oh, man, I thought, you know, when he got to 7 or 8 in a row,
yeah,
and I knew
yeah.
the last couple were going to be, anyway, we're way late. Yeah. We got to get to a break. Yeah. How'd you do, Simmer?
Would have gone 8 for 10. Yeah. I thought Allen cleaned up in the third period, and I did not remember. I remember the quote being on John Graham. Didn't remember an Ottawa Tampa Bay playoff series.
All right, we'll take a break, get you the latest news and sports, and come back with Pierre McGuire live from Vegas coming up next on TSN 1200.